The Christmas story was beautifully portrayed through many voices and instruments here at Second on Christmas Eve. And the story continues now with these three vignettes. One features Mary, Joseph, and Jesus. A second features a devout man named Simeon. And a third features an 84-year-old prophet named Anna. These three stories, all previously disconnected, are woven together by the Holy Spirit here as Jesus is presented at the temple. In the same way, each of us, with our disconnected stories, are gathered by the Holy Spirit as we come together each Sunday morning and worship the Lord together wherever we are. We are gathered disconnected before we come in various ways through our various ideas and experiences, our preferred politics and pro sports teams. We are all gathered by the Holy Spirit this morning at the end of a year, which frankly, if we're honest, many of us would like to leave behind us. We gather to begin again at the beginning of this story of Jesus Christ. This morning in that story, we see first Jesus' faithful parents doing what faithful Israelite parents do, presenting their newborn to the Lord at the temple. This is similar to what we do as we present our children and respond to God's promises by faith in baptism. Respond in faith to God's promise to claim us as God's own, to never leave us nor forsake us throughout all the ups and downs of our lives and our years. We're told of the harsh conditions in which Jesus began his life here on earth, and yet Joseph and Mary respond in faith and present their child to the Lord nevertheless. I'm reminded again of the baptisms that have happened this harsh year in the midst of this pandemic. Again and again, parents are responding to God's promises by safely and socially distanced presenting their children to the Lord in baptism. Adults are coming forward to be baptized and begin again anew at the waters of baptism. Notice also that Mary and Joseph present their child to the Lord in the company of the faithful. It strikes me that as a faith community, whether we are physically present at these baptisms or not, nevertheless, we are the community of faith surrounding those being baptized, holding them in prayer, nurturing them in faith, teaching them, witnessing to our hopes and our dreams for their lives before the Lord and in the presence of one another. The light of salvation, which was first glimpsed as Jesus was presented in the temple, continues to shine in each baptism that happens here. Our next vignette features Simeon. He's described as one who was looking forward to the consolation of Israel. Israel was in need of consolation. Their history was one of a people who had known joy and flourishing, and in their more recent history had known displacement and dispersion. They were in need, especially now, of consolation. I wonder if you can relate. At the tail end of 2020, where are you needing consolation now? Where have you been displaced, dispersed, stuck, exhausted, hurting? Are you, like Israel, yearning for a return to former times, to better times? As you look outside of yourself, what situations are crying out for the consolation of the Lord? Simeon's word to us is this: light has shined into the world and into our lives that brings that consolation. And that light signifies our salvation. Light is an image in this passage that really resonates with me. It's an important image throughout the Bible. In the Old Testament, Israel is described as a light to the nations. They are meant to illuminate the kind of life that God means for us to live in relation to God and in relation to one another. Israel does this. They are a light to the nations by virtue of receiving the law, God's commandments. They spell out these commandments, how we are meant to live in relation to God and each other. And as Israel lives this way, they are God's light. They are to illuminate their light and shine into the nations in a way that draws all people into the great community of God. The glory of Israel lies in the fact that they are God's light in this way, by receiving and following God's life-giving law for the world around them to see and to be drawn into. The trouble, of course, is that just having the instruction manual is no guarantee that it will be followed. In fact, as psychologists and parents well know, humans are predictably oppositional. Israel often precisely did exactly the opposite of what God commanded. And in so doing, they hid their light under a bushel, as we often do. And so, God sends his light into the world unmediated, shining through the light of the birth of this child, Jesus. Light is an amazing gift. It does so many things that we need every day. Light brings clarity. It helps us to see clearly what is before us and what is all around us. Sources of light generate heat. They bring warmth and sustenance, but they can also get hot and burn us. Shining a bright light onto something helps us to see its imperfections and problem areas. For example, going to the dentist, lying on our backs in a dentist chair, on an operating table, there are bright lights shining on us in order to identify our problem areas and allow the healing process to begin. The kind of light that Jesus is, that Simeon describes in this passage, operates in all these kinds of ways. It reveals beauty and virtue. It also reveals ugliness and hurt. It brings comfort and warmth. It also burns and heals. Throughout the Gospel of Luke, we see that Jesus reveals the inner thoughts of those with whom he comes into contact, both the proud and the humble. For the proud and powerful, those who try to trip Jesus up and put him in his place, Jesus lays bare their vain motives for all to see. For the humble and humiliated, Jesus reveals their need for being lifted up and restored, and he does that. For example, the rich young ruler who follows the law fastidiously is revealed to love wealth more than God or neighbor. Many religious leaders are revealed to be more committed to their own interests than to God's interests. But then there's Anna, the focus of our last vignette. Her biographical sketch is both brief and tragic. After she was married for 7 years, her husband died, leaving her a widow until the age of 84, where we meet her in this morning's passage. Now, living as a widow at that time put people into a vulnerable place on many levels, financially, socially, and so on. And her entire life had been spent in waiting for God's redemption to come. And finally, that day in the temple, it had come. Jesus arrived shining the light of salvation. Anna reveals to us something important about where our time and attention may be fruitfully directed. And that is in waiting and expectantly looking for God's light, and when we find it, to live in that light. Elsewhere in the New Testament, we're told that we are children of light. 1 John tells us that our main job is to live in the light. If we're honest, that's probably a little bit of a different job description than many of us have carved out for ourselves. We are prone to chase after our own definitions of success as if our lives depended on it. And sometimes we dangerously link our own life's meaning and identity with what we have accomplished or failed to accomplish successfully. We can end up spending the bulk of our time and energy being anxious about matters that do not matter, as Haddon Robinson put it so well. It has become a meme that success is pursued at the cost of our overall well-being. This is nothing new in our culture. Several years ago, Princeton Seminary professor Diogenes Allen tackled this dynamic when he was discussing a phenomenon called the winner's blues. It was a phenomenon being reported by the New York Times, and studies there showed that a large percentage of people who were most successful were reportedly being unhappy, unsatisfied, with a case of the blues. The Times suggested that the problem was a lack of balance, that these people were devoting most of their time to work and neglecting other important areas in their life, family, physical health, mental health. Finding balance as a remedy is a good one. However, Allen rightly points out that just offering balance as a solution doesn't closely examine enough the source of balance. Balance cannot simply be found by giving more time to our families or taking up new hobbies. Balance can only come from having a connection with the source of this world, not by rearranging the things within it. We live well in this world by having contact with that which is not of this world. In other words, love God, and you will rightly love your neighbor. It was just as true of ancient Israel as it is of us. It is in our DNA to live well as we allow God's light to shine on us, as we allow that light to shine in us and through us to those around us. Success in spiritual term boils down to living in the light. This is where we find our salvation, the saving of things and people that seem to be hopelessly lost. This is where we find our consolation, the comfort and healing of past hurts and broken situations. The light of salvation brings redemption, redeeming situations that seem to be far beyond the pale. It's not a matter of rearranging our lives. It's a matter of reorienting our lives. It's a matter of placing ourselves in the light of Christ, which is the light of salvation. And note well that this is not a one and done deal. This is something that we need to do every day, just as we need our daily bread. In this way, we're no different than the rest of God's creation, the plants and the flowering plants and fruit, that we need daily doses of light. Day by day, morning by morning, we need to do this, and we need each other's help to do it. Just as Joseph and Mary, Simeon and Anna, as a community, experience that light together, may we too, as a community of faith, live in the light of salvation in the days ahead, in the weeks ahead, in the years ahead. May it be so.